Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. Hey, Nate John here, producer for the show. Just another message for you about the show for this week. Voice of San Diego staff have started working from home, like many places have. And because of that, we have a different sound going on this week, and we'll likely have different sounds in terms of where we're recording from for the coming weeks. But we are committed to bringing you the news of the week every week that we can. This podcast was recorded at 1:25 p.m. on Thursday, March 19th. I feel obligated to tell you that now because things might have changed by the time you hear this. All right, here's the show.
Okay. I'm sitting in a closet. It feels very strange. Oh, there's a lot of jackets. Yeah. Thank you for asking. There's some Christmas wrapping paper. Dope vacuum.
I'm under a blanket. How does this sound?
Do you feel cozy?
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 COGO. I am Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice San Diego. I'm joined as always by Assistant Editor Andrew Keats. Hello, Andy.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Managing Editor Sarah Libby. Hello.
Hello.
All right, so you may notice we sound a little bit different. We are still Voice of San Diego, still the Voice of San Diego podcast, but we're all, like most people, working remotely, and so we're trying some new techniques out. So bear with us there. You know, we had a interesting week from the last podcast. You guys remember that, by the way, the last podcast?
No.
It is so insane to me how much the world has changed since we started recording that podcast.
Yeah.
Until now. But not just from then until now, also like how much the world changed in the 1 hour we were in that podcast studio.
It was extraordinary. Just to review, we had canceled our live podcast. We decided to bring Mark Kersey.
Which, let me add, when we canceled that podcast, it kind of felt like maybe we were overreacting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we had this adorable conversation.
We had a very agonized discussion about it.
Like, I love the podcast. Gosh, I don't know. They say we can still do it. So we have Councilman Mark Kersey come in, Eva Posner, political consultant. We talked to them. And during that hour, you guys were looking at, I remember I saw Sarah looking at her phone a couple of times. You must have got the note that Tom Hanks had got the virus.
I got a lot of texts about Tom Hanks while we were recording that podcast. And the NBA also suspended its season in that hour.
Yeah. Yeah. So we emerged into a world that was completely different from the one that we started recording in. That whole Wednesday it felt like the moment where things really hit home for a lot of people. And we were startled. I think it's fair to say the Voice of San Diego staff was rattled Wednesday evening.
Yes.
Yes.
So we met the next day. We got our heads together and kind of made a decision that, look, there's going to be one of two ways this goes. There's going to be organizations that are either relevant right now or organizations that are to succumb to the physics of what happens. And we were going to try to be relevant. And I you know, we're already a productive team around here, the reporters and the staff, and They have been very impressive over many years, but boy, they took the mandate and went after it. And I have never seen so much sustained traffic to our site over the last, 15 years I've been here, as I have over the last just 5 to 6 days, constant, or even over the weekend, late at night, early morning. There's so much interest in what we're doing. I'm hearing from friends who never pay attention, who are deeply plugged in. Obviously, there's a lot of people thirsty for information. We kind of decided we would have two major focuses. One would be, obviously, local journalism on this stuff is more important than ever. And secondly, other topics didn't go away. They're going to be all framed and exaggerated and juiced by this experience and by what's happening with this virus, but they're still going to be very important to cover. And so we're locked in. We're working remotely. We're doing things differently. But I'm really proud of everybody rallied. It feels like they've taken that purpose and run with it. But it is weird to juggle the kids and all of these things. I saw Kristen Gaspar, the county supervisor, tweet that, like, hey, this isn't a break. This isn't a holiday, guys. Like, you need to keep your kids in. I'm like, who thinks of this as a holiday? This is not a holiday.
It's the opposite of a holiday. What is the opposite of a holiday?
Can you imagine how luxurious just going to work and, like, sitting at your desk and, like, doing your normal job would be?
I don't think the childless realize how much of a respite Monday morning can be.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So relaxing to be sitting at my desk working right now.
Yeah. Imagine a world where, like, you woke up, you took your kids to daycare, you went to work, and at some point you walked over to a friend in the office and you said, hey, do you want to go get a cup of coffee?
Oh, man. What a life that would be.
Have we ever lived in that world? No.
Yeah, it was a thing. Like, it was a really normal thing. Sarah and I, just the other day, walked to a lunch meeting together.
Yeah.
Strolling along.
Can you believe that?
Like that.
That was a thing that we did.
Well, you know, as good as that sounds, another good thing to do is to anxiety pace in the middle of your house while constantly for up-to-date data about just how horrific the situation we're in is. So that's good too.
Yeah. Well, I'll try it. All right, we do have more on the show. Yes, it is a global pandemic, and our economy, our culture, our lifestyles have all been radically altered, if not shut down, at least temporarily. What we know so far about that, and it has happened. Barbara Bree surpassed Scott Sherman for second place in the mayoral primary. We'll talk about what's going on there and how the trend has been going since votes were continually counted. That'll make for a much different mayoral race than what we were thinking it might be, or what at least a local newspaper thought it was definitely going to be. And finally, things we're going to be working on. All right, Andy, I think one of the moments that really drove it home for me, not only was Tom Hanks and the NBA shutting down and all these reports, but it was the report that we saw, self-announcement from Councilman Steve Padilla of Chula Vista. He's the chairman of the Coastal Commission as well. The Coastal Commission oversees, you know, what you can build on the coast, maintains access to the coast. Building a convention center or even just something on your house and you live on the coast, the Coastal Commission has a role. He is the chairman of that commission, and they have a staff and everything. They meet all across the state. He goes to a Coastal Commission meeting, starts to get sick, and he told you the whole story from there.
Yeah, so Steve Padilla, Chula Vista councilman, was diagnosed on Saturday with the coronavirus. He is the first elected official in California. I talked to him Monday, and I mean, suffice to say, I mean, I think the couple things I took away from it were just what a life a public official leads and what it can mean when they didn't realize that they had it. And he obviously had it for some number of days before he was officially diagnosed. So that included flying home from Santa Cruz. It included being present at a public, a meeting where you're obviously going to be talking to a lot of people. It may have even meant election night, which would have been included, you know, going to Golden Hall and talking to people there. He did an event as a Chula Vista councilman at the Olympic Training Center where he was, you know, hanging medals on people. So just the level of exposure that a public official has to the public when times are normal, it obviously becomes immediately concerning just how many people they interact with. The other thing that really stood out, though, was how sick he is. I mean, he just he couldn't emphasize enough how much he could feel his body battling a very serious virus. And you know, I got to say, I got the sense that he was kind of scared. He was not comfortable with the idea that he had been diagnosed and he's young and healthy and he's probably going to be okay. He seemed quite scared that this was very serious.
Yeah, he says in there when he announced it, he did it on a Twitter video, and he says, you know, I feel fine, I feel great. But when you talk to him, he's like, my body is fighting hard. He's 53 years old, so he's, you know, over 50, but he's a pretty healthy guy, it seems like. He says he has
Slight asthma.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, I have slight asthma and I'm in my 40s. That really hit home. So yeah, that and just, you know, to me, him being sick was an indication he hadn't been counted yet in the totals. And that was just to me an indication that this is so much farther beyond these numbers that we're reporting breathlessly every day in the newspaper and such, like 80, I think it's up to 80 as we record this. That just doesn't seem anywhere close to reality, but it does seem like an important trajectory to keep track of. But the county released that it only had 1,200 tests locally. I don't know if that has been updated yet, but 1,200 tests for a county of 3 million people obviously does not seem adequate. There was more news so we're following kind of these three areas, right? Like, how does the actual healthcare system get impacted? How does the government respond? And then the third is just how our culture and economy respond. Yesterday, Wednesday evening, Gavin Newsom, the governor, said the state typically receives about 2,000 unemployment claims every day. He says 2-3 days ago, we saw about 40,000. And then he said 70,000. And then he said yesterday, we had 80,000. It doubled in just a 48-hour period. Obviously, that's the hard part with this, is it feels like we're just at the dawn of what this experience is going to be like.
I mean, I think what is clear here is that governments are being expected to come in and cushion the blow of the economic impact that's, I mean, crushing small businesses and with it causing many people to lose their work. And yet governments are losing, you know, huge amounts of their access to tax revenue. And so they're both looked at as someone to provide a solution, but they're also victims of the economic crisis themselves. And so I don't understand quite how this is going to work, but both in terms of maintaining any sort of service levels and doing anything they can to marshal some sort of relief response or stimulative response. Presumably, it's going to have to come in the form of some sort of bailout from the federal government to local government. But we're still just getting to the point of understanding even what the size of the problem is, let alone what a solution that is like fit to the cause might be.
Yeah, I think, you know, I look back at things that seemed naive or adorable in a way. Was this giant debate we had for years about how much money that hotel room tax increase, Measure C on the March 3rd ballot, was going to provide to help with homelessness and road repair and this expansion of the convention center. Well, built on a hotel room tax, and hotel room taxes don't work if nobody goes to hotel rooms, and it has completely ceased. I mean, it seems like it's got to be a 4-to-1 reality that Comic-Con does not happen right now. And I would be shocked if somehow we reverse it then, but maybe we can get there. But the tourism or the transient occupancy tax at the city of San Diego is a major part, one of three major sources of revenue for the city, sales taxes and property taxes in addition. And, you know, if that completely dries up, that takes a budget deficit that we were facing of like $80 million and makes it massive and terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, the city's general fund comes, you know, it relies about, you know, give or take like 10% from transient occupancy taxes, hotel taxes. And like, that is basically a zeroed out revenue source right now. You know, you just 10% of the general fund budget just takes a haircut right like that. And now sales tax revenue maybe hasn't taken as big a hit. I mean, things like grocery stores are actually probably doing very well right now. But I don't think anyone's buying a washing machine or a car right now. And those sorts of big ticket goods are significant drivers of sales tax. So that's like, you know, a quarter of the city's general fund budget. Now, property taxes are probably pretty stable. But for another, you know, agency that's going to be impacted by sales tax revenue, Transnet is already in a tight spot with the amount of revenue that's coming in. And, you know, you could see significant amounts of that drying up over the next few months.
You're talking about the half-cent sales tax for the roads and transit throughout the county that was already in short, like you said. One thing to keep in mind with that, food is not subject to sales tax, right? Like, there's a whole array of products. Did she finally get the diapers thing in too? Like, a lot of things that people are stocking up on aren't taxable.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's... in some ways, it doesn't even make much sense to cut up the discussion like this, because the bottom line is everything has come to a halt. So any money that goes to the government is basically, that through economic activity, is in big trouble right now. And it doesn't really, you know, like, so one thing you and I were laughing about is that last week I started trying to survey different public agencies and pseudo public agencies to ask how things were going. And like, the idea of counting which conventions had canceled at this point is hysterical. Like,
right.
The number of them that are canceled is all of them, you know? Yeah. And like, oh, like I, you know, I was like monitoring a drop in hotel occupancy that was like from 77% to 70%. Now it's like there is no hotel occupancy. You know, no one's staying in hotels unless they're quarantining themselves away from their families.
Yeah, I think it's you know, I mean, the virus is part of the economy. It's being shared because of the economy, and that's what we're doing. We're shutting down the economy, you know, as a way to stop the spread of the disease. So it's not like the stock market or whatever is reacting to some sort of fear. The stock market's reacting to the economy being shut down. And you know, that is a logical thing that the government has decided to do, that the leaders have decided to do, public health officials. And this is the consequence from that. So it's going to have major effects. And it seems like we're getting closer to understanding who will be part of the effort to fix all of this or deal with the consequence from that. From the city of San Diego's perspective, the mayor's race seems now clear. The election feels like 2 years ago, but it was about 2 weeks ago. And we were still watching every day at 5 p.m. the numbers come in and of the provisional ballots. And that, you know, it showed at first Councilman Scott Sherman up with a 3,000 vote lead. It kept getting chipped away at. Barbara Bree finally on Monday flipped it to a 9-vote lead and has since expanded it. So it looks pretty clear. Some kind Hail Mary of vote counting could flip it again, but it seems pretty clear Councilwoman Barbara Bree will face Assemblyman Todd Gloria, two Democrats, in the November general election for the mayor's race. Andy, what do you think that would do to the race? It's going to be a much different complexion and probably pretty fierce.
Yeah, so, I mean, in one respect, this is the race we were sort of prepared for as recently as like late December, before Scott Sherman got into the race at the last possible minute. And it did look for a while like he had maybe a slight inside track to get into the general and face Todd Gloria. But that wasn't actually what happened. So now we're faced with the race that we had been preparing for a year ahead of that. The difference is now the entire complexion of the race has changed. It's going to be a race between Todd Gloria and Barbara Bree making a case about who can best handle this crisis that's going to face the city government and what the economy needs, what the city can do to help the economy, what the city can do to maintain services with all the budget revenues it's leaving. I mean, it's kind of interesting to think about just how different the major issues of the race were a week ago compared to where they are now. I mean,
yeah, like, will scooters and Airbnb and that building downtown, will they matter? I mean, I suppose, you know, mismanagement will still be a competence, you know, tests, those kinds of things will still be an issue, but it does feel like some of these, major issues are going to be just have a much different complexion.
And not just the issues, but also like the actual physical dynamics of running a campaign. I mean, we just don't have any idea what it's going to look like in terms of, you know, they're used to being so visible in the community and going from event to event every single day. And you saw what Steve Padilla's day looked like before he was diagnosed. And so just trying to imagine a mayor's race in which it's, you know, perhaps like almost entirely virtual and conducted over email communications and things like that is pretty hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah. And to the extent that one of the benefits of getting an endorsement from the Labor Council and the Democratic Party is that those two entities historically have run good ground campaigns and turn out the vote operations that involve going door to door. I don't know. Is that an activity that's going to be taking place in the fall, going door to door with finalia to hand out, you know?
Yeah, I hadn't really contemplated the impact that you just described, but absolutely. Like, you know, it seems like at that point, the big macro physics of a situation like this play much bigger, like name recognition, money you can spend on commercials, all kinds of sort of big ways you can reach people. Tech savviness are all going to be more important. And if you're banking on kind of rallying people in small coffees and fundraising opportunities with small groups, like you're going to have to really switch and build a truly digital infrastructure, maybe unlike anything we've seen for a local race like this. So that's a really good point. All of these small coffees that they all relied on, these handshaking, you know, extravaganzas, that's all over for, you know, at least till midsummer, it seems like.
I also just wonder what, like, how different things might be if you're doing most of your communicating in an online format. We saw, you know, one of the most provocative moments of the campaign up to now was Barbara Bree's "They're Coming for Our Homes" email. And then when she was confronted about that type of messaging in person, she seemed to back off a little bit and try to say, oh, well, that's not what I meant. I just meant this very specific, innocuous message. And so if it's all being done in a format in which you're not really like confronted face to face, I feel like it could have the potential to get a lot uglier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. To the extent that Barbara Bree, in a lot of ways, did drive the narrative of the campaign, and I think she did, it wasn't because of things she was saying at meet and greets over coffee. It was the
exactly.
The blasted out stuff through social media or email. The other thing I would say is, maybe people will celebrate this change, but San Diego mayoral elections have a long history of basically every group in town hosting their own community forum and the candidates sort of going on this like barnstorming tour all over the city with lunch forums and evening forums and, you know, sometimes 10, 15 forums in a given week where they basically each say the same things to slightly different groups of 20 or 25 people. I don't know that those events are going to take place in this climate either. So, you know, the time of every Elks Lodge and neighborhood group and town council being able to host their own mayoral forum, those might give way to just a smaller amount of mass broadcast forums as a huge number of, you know, mid-sized community gatherings.
Yeah. Well, we are going to be following all of these things deeply. This is an unprecedented moment for a lot of people. I've been asking a lot of older folks if they've ever seen anything like this, and they never have. So local journalism, I think, is going to be as important as it ever has been. And we promise to be as relevant and as interesting as possible. We continue to need your support. If you support what our reporters are doing, please go to voiceofsandiego.org/donate. And we'll pledge to make sure that we're constantly providing public service journalism that matters. And if you have any tips, if you're a healthcare worker, a business struggling, anything like that, you can always let us know. You can email me, scott@voiceofsandiego.org. That's scott@voiceofsandiego.org. You can do that with Sarah's name or with Andy. Yeah, and you can also send anything to info@voiceofsandiego.org. We've also got a form up. I think a really good piece that's gotten a lot of traction has been our guide to the guidance. You can just search Voice of San Diego guide to the guidance that's been coming out, and there's a form there you can fill out. Anyway, we want to hear from you. What do you want to know about what's going on? What do you want investigated, and what have you been hearing? All right, thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast. It is the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in part in downtown San Diego, part in Sarah's closet, part in Andy's whatever room. We're going to keep up the coverage of this coronavirus. Subscribe to our newsletters at vosd.org/newsletters to get our insights and everything else. The morning report is the place to be right now. It's the best way to follow everything that's happening. And if you haven't seen it yet, we are constantly updating that official Voice of San Diego guide to the guidance about the coronavirus. That's at our homepage, and you can also find it at vosd.org/corona. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief. Andrew Keats, the Assistant Editor, Sarah Libby's Managing Editor, and this show is produced by Nate John, Megan Wood, and Adrian Helles, and recorded, at least partly, in the podcast studio, which is sponsored by Bob Nelson Charitable Fund. Thank you so much to him and to all of our supporters. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
It was very hot under my blanket. I was not happy about under there.